This episode is sponsored by Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy is dedicated to providing 100% carbon-free energy by 2050, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. Join Xcel Energy and you'll find a purpose-driven career, solid job security, and challenging work. Xcel Energy knows the value your military service brings to the workplace. It's an exciting time to be in the energy industry. Whether you're on active duty, transitioning, or already embarking on your civilian career, learn about the opportunities with one of America's leading utilities, Xcel Energy, at xcelenergy.com/military. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to challenge and support military veterans to reach their peak potential in both their professional and personal life. Today's episode number 332, Following Your Gut with Rich Cardona.
Look, if you listen to this whole episode and you got to this point, like, look how many times I jumped off the bridge without a parachute. And you know what? Everything's okay. So what I'm trying to say is I really, truly, truly believe that you could have your side hustle. You know, you could have your primary job and work on your side hustle or your entrepreneurial journey on the side. But it will never get the air and the water and the food and the nurturing that it needs to grow fast and for you to be able to figure out all the problems associated with it. The minute it's option A and you're all in, you will fall over so many times, failing every single day, and you will also have bigger, grander, more meaningful victories that allow you to surge fast.
Rich left what many would consider a dream job in order to pursue starting his own company. Even if you are not an aspiring entrepreneur, this is an exceptional and motivational interview. Rich talks about following his gut again and again in his own career journey. He talks about not being afraid to leave a job, but rather to be committed to finding the right opportunity for you and your family. We talk about taking risks in networking and giving to others and how that has paid off in spades for Rich. I loved talking to Rich, and I think you will really enjoy both his perspective and his advice. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss, as well as a link to richcardonamedia.com, Rich's company. You'll also find over 330 episodes just like this one. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Rich. Joining me today in Washington, D.C., my guest is Rich Cardona. Rich, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
So Rich is one of those guys where it's difficult to give his bio. I'll give an abbreviated version, but I'm obviously leaving out some big pieces here. Foremost, he is the founder of Rich Cardona Media, which takes the stress out of social media by creating first-class video content for you and your brand. As we'll talk about, that is just the tip of the iceberg for what Rich is doing, but probably the simplest way to explain what he does. He started out in the Marine Corps, where he served for 17 years, most recently as the director of Marine Aircraft Group 39's legal office. His post-military career includes work as a regional consultant at Victory Media, a Pathways Operation Manager for Robotic Storage Platforms at Amazon, and an MBA from USC's Marshall School of Business. So maybe to start things off, Rich, anything you'd like to add or amend to that bio?
Podcast host, director of videography, founder, and all kinds of other nonsense. Very novice athlete, father, husband, expecting another one here in probably about 30 days. We have another one coming. This one's a surprise, by the way, which is really exciting. But I mean, all kinds of things. I just want to say off generalist. I don't think I'm an expert in anything unbelievable. I think it's hard to be exceptional in something, and I think I found something that I can be, but I like to just kind of have a wide range of qualities. So to answer your question, I mean, there's a ton of things I could say, but I'm happy
Actually,
where I'm at.
Just to tug on that thread, if you're walking down the streets of DC, you ran into a guy or gal who served in the military and they said, Rich, what do you do for a living now? How do you answer that, given the wide variety of things that you do?
What I would say is I bring I help people deliver their value through visibility. And I say people, even though, of course, I have a very specific target audience, but what I want to do is to highlight individuals who have value to offer the world, which I believe we all do. And I do that in multiple ways. Like the business itself is me working with you, Justin. Let's just say me working with you, and I am making video content for you that you have throughout the month. The other part of what I do is I have a podcast. That is not part of the business, but I interview influencers so that way they could share their expertise with transitioning service members and veteran entrepreneurs, which I have been through both. I have done both. And I know it could be a very visceral experience, disorienting and all this other stuff. So, you know, I just want to bring people value and I want to help others bring value, I think is more importantly. That is fundamentally the core of what I do.
Awesome. So for listeners, we're going to bookmark that because that's where I want to spend most of our time. But I think it's important for people to hear a little bit about your transition, especially around Amazon. I think there's a compelling story there. But rewind the clock for us. You leave the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
At 17 years, which is an interesting point. Walk us through your decision to leave the Marine Corps and then share a little bit about what that experience was like.
So I'm going to start with saying this. When you're in and you're ready to get out, you are so ready. When you get out, the longer you're out, the more you want back in. I feel like that's a common trend across a lot of friends and I, so I did 17 years. I retired at 17 years, actually. And the reason is, and I always love to say this, the Marine Corps doesn't have a recruiting problem. So they can offer people early retirements. So I'm like, sure, let's do this. And the reason I said, sure, let's do this is because I was in California. I'd been there for about 6 years. And I was halfway through my MBA. And I just knew it was coming anytime that someone was going to walk in and be like, Rich, we got a great deal. You're going to Okinawa. I was just at that point where I was anticipating it, and I really was at this kind of almost fighting against the big green machine. Like, I'm going to call the shots. So I decided I wanted to put in for a retirement package. The second part of that is, which I usually don't share this off. I've actually never shared this. So congrats. I had a seizure. I had a seizure when I was running a half marathon. About a year and a half before I retired, I was running, and then it's like someone put the lights out. I don't remember anything, and except waking up in an ambulance, and they're like, "You're okay, you're okay." I mean, I've never ever experienced anything like that. I've been knocked unconscious a couple times from some hard spills, but like for like a second, you know. But this was different. So flying was out of the question pretty much at that point. They're like, "They'll never let you fly." And I was like, okay. And then even the neurologist is like, you may never have a seizure again, but we can't take the risk. So they're like, oh, by the way, you can't drive for 6 months. I'm like, what? And I'm like, so anyway, but that led me to this weird legal officer position, which I loved. And I met the best mentor I've ever had and worked for him. But despite all these things, it just seemed like the right thing. And it's really difficult to kind of conceptualize, you know, that way of thinking back then. But I just knew. I'm a very instinctual person. So I pulled the trigger. I got approved for retirement, and I was very happy to do so and stay in San Diego.
I love that. I love to hear that you're an instinctual person. I feel like most of the people I talk with, it's the analysis paralysis. I just talk with a lot of vets, especially when it comes to getting out, where it's like, you know, spreadsheet of pros and cons and all of these things. And I'm not meaning to knock that. And also I think that there's people that are wired that way.
Yes.
But I think it's good for listeners to hear about what your decision sounds like, which is trusting your gut and your intuition. Yes. And saying like, okay, there's probably a lot of fear here, but it feels like the right thing to do. I'm going to pull the trigger and make this change.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, and that was it. Look, like I do the kind of flow of things and the pros and cons and evaluate, but at some point you and I both know we've kind of gone against our instincts and just be like, why did I do that? You know, it just kind of ends, you end up in this place where you get upset with yourself, and I'm just like, I'm through that. I'm just like not at this point in my life where I'm any decision is going to just paralyze me in the opposite way, which is just like negativity, and I don't like to live in that space. And I think that was a really pivotal moment for me where I was just like, you know, I think my time's up. And you know what? I'm thrilled with my service. A lot of people are like, I would have stood on my head for the next 3 years just to get to 20. I'm like, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm completely happy. So, yeah.
Yep. I imagine we'll get into this, but what I admire about that is also the confidence. And I faced fear leaving the military. I know a lot of people did. And I think that you're an example of that confidence of like, I've got this. I'm gonna figure it out. It's gonna be okay. And I don't wanna minimize how big of a leap that is. I mean, yes. 17 years, you know the system, you know everything about it, and then to go off into the unknown takes a tremendous amount of courage.
And we will see how that comes back. And that comes back a little bit later in the story. So that leap is like nothing. It's like, you know, compared to what we'll cover. But yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's difficult, but it's worth it.
And so you start, it seems like you start at Victory Media. Kind of walk us through that first job, what that was about, and then what led you to Amazon.
Well, I'm going to say what happens to a lot of people. I thought I was so unbelievably ready for the transition. And by that, I mean, I was doing all the work. You know, I mean, look, I was a legal officer, so I had a lot of extra time on my hands. Don't get me wrong, I was busy, but I had a lot of extra time. So I was always doing studying. I got to the office early and would study for MBA related material. I was in the middle of getting my MBA from a private school. I was growing my network. I was meeting tons of people. I was literally, in my opinion, doing everything you're supposed to do in order to effectuate a good, calm transition. Well, guess what? And I'm sure you've heard this before. No one wanted me. I mean, I felt like a catch. And I mean, I was applying for all kinds of things. And don't get me wrong. Like, I know a lot of people overvalue themselves. Like, I'm going to apply for the VP of finance at wherever. It's like, no, I'm not sure that really works out. You know, and at the same time, a lot of the things I was getting, which I've made plenty of content about this, is I was getting offered very entry-level positions. And I was like, 17 years, 1 year through my MBA, leadership, I have 2 bachelor's degrees, all this other stuff. You know, I'm articulate, I'm professional, no trouble, and nothing. So I ended up with that job, and I'm going to just say, I just took it because it was what was available. And I actually just made a post about this today as well from my podcast about, you know, how sometimes service members get pinged for these sales jobs that are just like not necessarily in the wheelhouse. And I think they do it because there's so many of them available and people will be like, hey, but then what happens is you start looking at it and it's like, if you're not behind the product, you're already behind the power curve. And then second thing, like fulfillment of the product is key. So that kind of didn't work out so well for me. You know, it wasn't what I anticipated. But more importantly, this is the most important piece, is that I put myself in a position where I was going to start deviating from my own character in terms of how I would sell, how I would build relationships, because I was just trying to make up for the I'm sorry, is this G-rated or
no, we can go whatever way you
want to
go.
Sorry, like just the shitty pay. And I'm like, okay, well, I need commissions. Like I would get up at 5 a.m. I would probably have 100 emails out before 7 a.m. and I would email people all over the country. And I literally got hate mail from people on the West Coast. Like, why are you emailing me at 3 a.m? Not that they were checking, but they were just probably confused. And I was doing pitching and all this stuff. So it was just not a good fit. So the key takeaway there is, you know, number one, you're not entry level. You're not entry level. I mean, like, you shouldn't settle for entry level. And as far as that, I put myself in a position where, you know, I was just kind of like, okay, anything that's going to act as a life raft for some sort of income. And even though I had, you know, retirement and everything else, you know, I still had a lifestyle that I wanted to continue with and enjoy in San Diego, but it just didn't work out. It didn't work out at all. And I found myself being like, what have I done?
And if you were advising someone similar, and I know that we'll talk about your podcast because I know that you do advise people in similar situations, but I'm wondering, do you view that as like to avoid underselling oneself? Is that the process of just get the job to pay the bills and then figure it out? Or would you advise someone in that exact same situation, like, don't take that offer, hold out a little bit longer? Like, how would you advise people to avoid that pitfall?
This is what I absolutely believe to be true. I believe we all think we want to be with these bigger brands, or we want to be with these established companies. And sometimes we gravitate immediately towards something that resembles our tribe, the tribe that we're leaving. So when you go to Victory Media and they have GI Jobs and all these other things, I'm like, okay, cool. I'm home. It kind of makes the transition a little bit better, because you're like, I'm going to be surrounded by people who are like me. But you know what? I think that's a mistake. I think what you need to do is overcome the fear of assimilating to different people, a different environment, civilian, so to speak. And I think you need to actually really give some consideration to smaller up-and-coming companies that might not be able to pay you exactly what you want, but you could probably overcome that within a year. And if you are helping this small company grow, the potential for growth is substantial, you know, yes, versus just going to well-established company A, B, or C. I'll just take the check. I mean, you're just not going to get noticed as much as you think. And I think that's a really, I just think you just shouldn't settle, you know, just take the deep breath. You've been through, you know, intense situations before, more than likely, if you've been in the military, and just really try and make the most educated and logical decision. And it shouldn't always revolve around finances. Mm-hmm. I understand we lose BAH, we lose this, and this, and insurance. I got to pay insurance. What the hell is this about? But you know what? It's better than being unhappy. If you can land yourself in the right place, you will just have a much better transition.
I love that. I mean, I think that underscores this thought of like financial stability gives you options. It gives you room. And there's part of me too, you know, in a lot of the personal growth work I do, I'm just learning to trust the process. And hearing your story, there's part of me where I'm like, well, like if we're whiteboarding this out, maybe your time at Victory Media wasn't ideal. And maybe that was just part of the process for you to understand this is what alignment looks like. And I imagine that's even more so true in your next position. Talk about, you know, how did that opportunity with Amazon come about? What was that experience like? And more importantly, what led you to leave this dream job?
Yeah, this is a great story. And I am going to make a disclaimer that this experience is unique to me. So I don't want to speak for other people. But that's just a disclaimer I have to put out there. So here I am. I got the MBA, and I had accepted an offer at Amazon in March. I originally declined that offer in December. And you know why? Because I was like, let me just do a little bit more homework. I was really kind of circling the wagons, trying to talk to veterans in the organization. And Justin, I just did not get this enthusiastic response that I was expecting. It was just kind of like the gut, right? Like my instincts were like, I don't know. But I had to do something. And the reason is my wife and I found out we were expecting. And I'm just like, I just felt like I had to kind of rise to the occasion. I wrote them back months later. They're like, yeah, we have plenty available. And I'm like, I figured I had already gone through the process. Everything should be okay. And it landed me in Austin. It was a new state-of-the-art facility. It wasn't even ready. We went to training in Ruskin, Florida. And I will tell you, from day one, I realized like, I'm not sure this is for me. Now, it's very blue collar. Love that. A lot of running around a warehouse, love that. But the amount of time I was going to be spending there, I kind of underestimated. And then secondly, again, this is very unique to me. I realized very, very, very quickly, there was not a lot of leaders I could look up to. There's people who've been in the company and in operations for a good amount of time. And you could just tell there's that pedigree there. But look, like a lot of us come from situations where we've served, where we probably have been around some of the most exceptional leaders that we know, and just so leaders aside, just human beings. So for me, I had realized once I kind of took on this position, that was the consistent thing since my transition that I had been longing for, which is just that person to want to follow into hell, right? Like who's that person? That was lacking substantially. So with that being said, I made big mistakes, and those mistakes were I started reaching out to people all over the company, this amazingly well-branded company that there's a line around the door to any position you talk about, someone wants that position. And here I am saying, get me out of here. Can you put me in product management or this? And I was looking for anything. I wanted out of operations because I was like, this is not the tempo I want once I have my daughter. Mm-hmm. And that was not a good move. And the reason is expressing your reluctance to be all in is just not a good move. Like, they invest a lot of money. I get it. And here I am, like, get me out. So not only that, but the people I talk to, you know, big companies are big, but, you know, there's small circles. So it's like, okay, this dude wants out. So that was probably very unnerving. Actually, my general manager at one point said, it's very unnerving how on the fence you are in one of our one-on-ones. And I was like, it's unnerving for me too. You know,
what would you, just to pause here though, how would you advise someone? Because there's, you know, for me, I appreciate the authenticity and the honesty of, like, the transparency of, like, hey, this is not working for me. If someone was in a similar position, what would you advise they do differently?
It really comes down to what do you want out of that job? If you have retirement, disability, maybe you have other, you know, passive income from real estate, who knows, whatever it may be, maybe money is not the actual answer. So with that being said, like, what do you actually want? If you just want really good, kind of not super challenging, predictable stability and work, then you might not, this is probably a job that you wouldn't want to take on. If you were someone like me who felt the desperation of being a provider, like, for whatever reason, I was like, I need to provide. Then money was a huge factor. And I felt validated. Number one, I also felt very validated for going to a private school to get my MBA, which I had to come out of pocket for, despite Yellow Ribbon, despite GI Bill. So that being said, what I would advise is you have to be crystal clear. Just like you and I know, we have to be very crystal clear on what we're trying to deliver to our audience. Whatever your business is, you have to be crystal clear on what you're trying to deliver your customer. You have to be crystal clear on what it is exactly that you want out of this next job in act two of your life. So that being said, in a similar situation, I would say, you know, you could continue to go with the flow, but quietly examine your options. And I would just say, don't overtrust, because people who are within, like, can you imagine someone getting to your unit and be like, I'm not feeling this. And you've been there for 2 years. I get it. I now get it. But just kind of keep to yourself. I don't want to say suffer silently, but really, really evaluate and try and be less emotional about it, which I was. And I'm just like, I can't do this.
Yeah. Which is also understandable. I have a 9-month-old son. I'm like, yeah, dude, the level of emotions that's probably triggering. Like, I would be the same way. I would be like, not operating as rashly. But I think that's great advice of the, you know, maintaining that all in mentality, but also taking care of yourself and figuring out what other options are.
Yep. I just want to add one thing. Job jumping, like, I cannot stand when people are like, you know, if, oh, this person has all these things on their resume, you know, that looks bad. Job jumping is so unbelievably normal. I think it's abnormal for anyone to be with the company more than 4 years at this point. So that being said, I want any veterans that are listening out there, do not fall into the trap of staying somewhere longer than you have to because you're afraid of what it's going to look like on your resume. You have every right in the world to look at your past work, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, 12 years, 17 years in the military, whatever it may be like, I am figuring this out. Like, no one can possibly rationalize what that type of transition is and the kind of vertigo it gives you. So that being said, you should have zero issue going into a logistics job and being like, you know what, this is not what I wanted. And you, if you were doing it from a place of self-awareness, you should be able to convey that to the people you interview with, and they should probably understand it accurately and empathetically.
I love that. I think that's spot on. So take us through where it goes from there. Then you're in this, like, this transition point.
Okay. Yeah. So here's how it goes. I kicked some serious ass. I'd had amazing shifts. My hourly associates always performed. I got promoted. My managers performed. My hourly associates performed. Like, we were just taking names, is what I like to say. So despite all this kind of disdain inside, or you know, discouragement, we were performing. Everything was going fantastic. But what was I doing? You know, I was working, like, obsessed with work. Everything I didn't want to do, I was doing because I just wanted to be seen. Like, hey, even though I don't love it, I'm still going to give you everything I got. So what does that do when all the noise goes away and you're not at work and you're home? I was never more distant from my wife than I was then. I was an absolute absentee father. I was like, I'm working so hard. I don't have time to take care of her. Like, I love her, but I don't have time to take care of her. And then most importantly, I was just like acting out. I was drinking heavily. And then, I mean, really heavily, like blacked out multiple times. I mean, it was just ugly, ugly character. And then I started cutting corners at work. I felt like I had trained the people around me so well that I didn't need to do so many different things. And nothing ever really bad happened, but I literally, and I've said this once before, but it's almost like I was trying to walk myself out the door. And ultimately it just came to a decision point where my wife's like, I don't even know you. Like, I didn't know me. And she's just like, and then I was pretty much in trouble with my one site, and I was supposed to go to another site to work with my old CEO, who I was mentioned was the best mentor ever. And we just pulled it. And guess what? I had no business plan, no idea what we were going to do. This was instinctual. Like, this can only get worse. This can only get worse. So what we did, talk about a leap, moved in with my in-laws at 37 years old, my wife, my daughter, my dog, and I into their basement after our 5-bedroom, 5-bathroom house in Austin, Texas. We left that for a 700 square foot basement with my in-laws. I'm not sure a lot of people would do that, but I will tell you what. It was the best decision I've ever made.
I think this is great. And just a couple of things I want to point out. First of all, I just really appreciate your candor. And the teachable moment for listeners is, I'm guessing it takes a lot of courage to open up and talk about the drinking and the absentee father, things like that. I think it's good for listeners to realize that when you open up with things like that, my trust of you is much higher. Like, I trust you more. I want to work with you more. I like you more. You've just revealed things about yourself that for most people are difficult to admit, difficult to open up about. And I think it's important for listeners, because I'm imagining they're having the same impact where they like you more, they trust you more, they want to be around you more, to realize that oftentimes when we open up about what we're most uncomfortable or most vulnerable about, in general, it leads people to trust us more. It seems counterintuitive. So I wanted to point that out. And second of all, I love this repeated example of you betting on yourself, you following your instinct. And I think it's great, and I'm sure we'll get into this more, it's great to realize this is not glamorous. Moving in with your in-laws at 37 and downsizing, there's nothing sexy about that. No. There's nothing Facebook post worthy about that. And yet it allows you to get room to live in alignment, to follow your heart, to figure out your next step, as we'll get into.
Yeah.
And it's a big leap leaving a company like Amazon that most people would kill to get into.
It really was. And So I'll pick up, and we moved in, and there was certainly some, you know, I was alleviated in a number of ways that there was now, I will say this, I immediately started getting much closer with my daughter, and it was really, really fun, and I loved it. So that was great. You know, and as far as family dynamics, I don't even need to paint the picture. Like, it doesn't matter how good or not so great a relationship you have, like being in a house, you know, as adults and all this stuff and the dog and they have a cat and this and that. I mean, just this kind of just can snowball into kind of a little bit of ugliness. But aside from that, I'm grateful that I made that decision because it allowed me, my wife always says, human beings are meant to be. So I just kind of like, it was like transitioning all over again. I just kind of like, okay, it's like I decompressed and I decided to look at my options and what I wanted to do. I was all in on myself. I was following Gary Vaynerchuk at the time, who's just like this like most unbelievable informal mentor to so many people because he put so much content out. And I was like, okay, what do I love to do? I love to take pictures. All right, I'm going to dabble in photography, started buying all this equipment. I was like, no. You know, the chances of really, really hitting it are just so, so minute. I was like, this isn't going to work. Started doing a little bit of videography for some local people. And this town, by the way, is a town of 3,000 people. It was hilarious. It was very, very small, rural Virginia. So I started going to these local businesses. And I would say, hey, gym, like this actual gym facility. I'm like, if I do a promo for your facility, can I get a few months free? They're like, yeah, like they could care less. Like they, like, I could have just asked and they would have, like, not to film. I could have just asked for free and they'd be like, yeah, go ahead. I did that for a couple of things. And I started to develop videography in my head, storytelling through videography. Well, that escalated a little bit. And here's really the pivotal moment. And I would say these are kind of uncommon, but it's important that I say it. I had a mentor on LinkedIn. Her name was Claude Silver. She's a chief heart officer of VaynerMedia. She had really helped me mentally through all that Amazon stuff. We would talk once a month. I'm like, she is a C-suite individual at a very popular company, and she's taking an hour, half hour to talk to me like once a month and just tell me you're actually in the driver's seat, not them. You know, when I was at my worst, she's telling me I'm in the driver's seat. I was like, what are you talking about? So here we are. I move in. She's 7 hours away in New York, and I'm like, I really would love to come see you and just thank you and whatever. So I had this huge plan. I'm like, I'm going to go and I'm going to pitch to her that I think she's so valuable that she should be visible and that I should film her. So we go up to New York, and I start kind of giving her that, and she's like, I trust you. And I'm like, and before I could say anything, I was taken back. I was like, wow. And then I kind of almost talked myself out of it, talked her out of it. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. She's like, okay. She's like, yeah. And I was like, I don't understand. But she later went on to say, she's like, I saw you in me. Like, I understand, you know, like I understand where you were. So I started doing a little bit of filming for her. And then the very, very first time I filmed her, she was on a panel. We're on the way back from this panel. I was asking her all these ridiculously very normal questions that she gets all the time from magazines and you know, content creators. So the cameras are off. We're in the car or the cab. It's pouring rain. And she just goes, how was combat for you? And I was just like, I continued to stare out the window. I didn't even do a double take, but I felt like I did. And then I just started answering, like unflinchingly honest. I was just like, boom, this, everything. I mean, everything. And she just took it. And then I started asking her questions. And equally, she was unflinchingly honest with me. We get back to VaynerMedia. We're getting out of the cab. And she goes, why weren't you filming that? And that is literally how my business was born. Seeing behind the curtain of C-level executives, C-suite executives who are people, you know, just and have so much value to bring and that people want to know them on a more intimate, a more real level, which is exactly what you were kind of talking about. The vulnerability goes a long way to foster a virtual connection that can actually be an emotional connection. And then face-to-face, I mean, forget it. So that is how I came up with the business. I wanted to bring her value through visibility and make content for her. And then I decided after that conversation, like the light bulb was like just on and exploded because it was so bright. And I'm just like, this is what I'm meant to do.
How did that relationship with Claude come about?
LinkedIn, which is, LinkedIn is everything to me. I mean, LinkedIn is everything to me. It's like, you never know. So I wrote her, this is so funny. I wrote her the longest message ever. Like, I'm a, you know, Marine and blah, 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 retired Marine. I'm in Amazon. I'm in Austin. Just all this stuff. And I don't know what the hell I said. I have to take a screenshot one day. It's still in there. And then she goes, you sound awesome. Let's be friends. That was her response. You know, you ever text someone for like, you know, it took you forever to write the text and they write back like, okay. And you're like, what? Like, that's it. That's it. You know? So that's exactly how it was. But she just said, you sound awesome. Let's be friends. And it's really hard to be like, how she doesn't, she must say that to everybody. Mm-hmm. And while she has the biggest heart of, you know, of anyone I know, she really invested in me immediately and she didn't even know me. It's crazy.
How did that, so she responds, I think this is such an incredible story. Like she says, you sound awesome, let's be friends. Do you then like, did you follow up and like, hey, can we call? Or like, where did it, what was like step two in that? Because this is such a powerful relationship with someone who I agree, like seems like they would be impossible to get a hold of.
I've 1,000%. So it, I probably looked at that message like a million times and I was like, did this just happen? You know, and I'm going to really bring this full circle. I wrote her and I have probably another super long message. And she's like, yeah, let's get on my calendar. So she put me in touch with her assistant. We scheduled a call on the very first call. It was just the most comfortable call. And it was just so great. And what happened was, as time went on, I realized the people I was missing and the people that I wanted do exist out here. Yeah. just in a different way.
Totally. Yep.
And I was just like, relieved. I'm like, okay, like I can do this now. You just have to put in the effort to find. You have to connect. You have to be present on social media, and you will find the people that you want to be around. And Jesus is like the biggest blessing. But yeah, I mean, we just started having like pretty much monthly calls. And I'm telling you, when I was like, I think I'm leaving, she's like, leave. You know, it was just like, but that person who didn't know anything about me, where my Marine friends might be like, are you out of your mind? You know, or my wife might say this, or my family may say this. Like, I just had someone who just didn't question it and just had faith, and it enabled me to have a lot of faith in myself as well.
One of the things I love about this is there's a phrase I like, which is using your body as the tuning fork for truth. And as I look back on your story, just as an external observer, there's something in you when it comes time to leave the Marine Corps, where you're like, this is right. And, you know, you go to your first job and you realize there's something not right there. And you go to your second job, you realize there's something not right there. And you're following that instinct. And then when you meet Claude, there's something in you where you're like, there are people, like, you're something in you says yes. Something in you says yes, and I want more of this. Yes. And I think the other thing that's important for listeners to hear here is that your first thing was photography. Your first thing was like, you know, this is what I'm going to do. And then you pull back because you realize there's not the opportunity there that's right for you. And I love that too, because I think a lot of people might just be like, well, it's photography and damn it, I'm going to make this work. And you just grind and grind and grind.
Yes, yes.
And you came up at some point and said, look, this is not the landscape I'm looking for. So it's not this just blindly leaping. Like you're putting yourself out there in a million ways. You're having hundreds of conversations. You actually followed up on that. I might not have. If someone said, you're awesome, let's connect, I might have been like, great, I got a connection on LinkedIn. You took the next step there. And so I just want to highlight for listeners, there's this aspect in your story of feeling into what's uniquely right for you and your family. And you're getting thousands of data points because you're working your ass off. You got up at 7 a.m. and you're sending all these emails. And I think that's a really good... both sides of that are really important for people to hear, so they don't just listen to one of those aspects.
I agree. And I my wife was on a job interview yesterday. I mentioned it before we started recording, and I left because I was like, I still wanted to listen, but I was like, I'm going to leave. And I got back and she goes, I go, how was it? She goes, it went really well. She goes, the only weird question I got was, and it's not weird, but she said, they said, you know, what's failure to you? And it's so funny because it's like, I asked her what question she was asked. And then I started answering for her, you know, like, even though the interview was done, I was like, oh, easy. I was like, easy. I was like, you know, you fail every day. You know, failures is like the natural process of elimination in life, right? Like everything that doesn't work out, you don't have to look at it like, ah, you know, if I mean, can you imagine if I was just like unbelievably hard on myself every time I didn't get a 300 PFT or something ridiculous like that, or that my uniform looked like shit, or that I was like, you know, just whatever, or that I didn't hit my numbers at Amazon, or that I didn't close this client this week or anything like that. Like, no, like it's always the ability to learn. So when I look at photography, and even though I really wanted to do it, I was like, it's just not right. You know, and then videography, like kind of not right. Like, who knows? I could have went into anything after that, and it would have still been the same process of just natural elimination. Like, if you don't have an issue with failure and you're able to embrace it, like, game on. Like, seriously, game on. And as long as you have, and the only caveat to that I would say is if you have a supportive family and your wife or your partner or whoever has faith in you as much, has the same amount of faith that you have in yourself and they do you, you're gold. You're gold.
So take us through the entrepreneurial journey. Like, you have this like incredible moment, you follow your instinct. What has the road been like for you?
Yeah, it's been massively rewarding is what it is. I have absolutely uncovered a need for people. And I knew that. Like, when you see someone, when I meet someone like her, I'm like, are you nuts? Like, you should be on, you should have content all the time. Literally through her, I went to a couple events filming her, then I meet the people she's with. So guess what? They're not my clients, but I'm going to do some work for them as well. And I'm going to send it to them a couple days later and be like, here you go. Surprise, surprise. I just did some free work. That ends up being like, I don't have content like this, but I really like it. And it's not a narcissistic thing, but people like to evaluate themselves. I like to see how I did on that panel. I like to see how it was when I was with the microphone. I like to see me and put content out. I'm proud that I was actually asked to come speak at this event or whatever it may be. So started sending people some things that they didn't ask for. And this is really, really, really important piece of advice, unsolicited advice to any aspiring entrepreneurs. Do not think that free work is not valuable, okay? Free work is very, very, very low risk for the people you're offering it to, and it gives you the chance to hone your skills and to practice. And once you kind of do your experimenting and what works and what's not, and you get your systems and processes in place, that free work, you're able to start charging, and those people are going to refer you out. Those people, if you do free work for them and it's good, they are going to refer you to other people, and they will make sure that they refer you to other people, not for free work. They're going to refer people to you who will be happy to pay you if they are not happy to pay you themselves. So that is a myth that needs to be just like completely demystified. So that's one thing. But I started doing that, and then I started getting calls, and I would do one-offs. And here's what I learned. If you asked me to come out and do content for you tomorrow, I'd be like, it's not enough. You know, just what, we're going to spend the day together and I'm going to make a promo for you and that's not enough? And that's enough? It's not. You have to have an ongoing content machine. So the actual business was born about a year ago in October, and I had my first actual full-time client in March, where I was paid on retainer for 6 months to make content for them over and over. So I would go spend, go ahead.
What was that time? So you had the idea, and how long was it till you had that first client?
My first full-time client was in March.
So that was that 3 months, 6 months?
October.
October.
December, okay, January. Yeah. So okay. In between then, I was doing gigs, but like this was like stable.
I think it's good for people to know that time frame, though, right? Because like, dude, it's electrifying to hear you. Like, it's very clear that you have found a career that's in alignment with who you are.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's very rare for me in 333 episodes to find someone where they're like, yeah, this is where you need to be right now.
Yeah.
And it's good for people to hear too. Like, okay, great. Incredible wind in your sales. It takes about 6 months to get a first full-time client. Just again, going back to finances for people to make sure that they're either living with their in-laws, which is great way to save money doing things like that, or you've built up your savings. Because this is not, when I hear your story, it's not you had this conversation with Claude and the next day you're freaking rolling in the cash. Like, it takes time, right? And I love what you're saying too about the thing I just want to point out is you're doing free work. You're getting good at it. That's great. And it's work that people value. And I think it's Cal Newport from So Good They Can't Ignore You, which is like, the market will tell you whether this is valuable. Like, if you were 100%. Doing this free work and no one was willing to pay, take the clue and adapt, right? Maybe this is photography. You need to do something else.
Yes.
So it's like listening to the market of like, is this valuable? Is this not? And you struck that. You found that chord.
That is so important, what you just said. There is the emotional willpower to succeed, which cannot be confused with the marketplace, which is, this is the first time we're actually talking about business in detail, but you are so on that, because you can waste an enormous amount of time trying to just make something happen that doesn't need to be. So look, I recognize, let me just put it to you this way. I'm reading this book called Stories That Stick by Kendra Hall. And there's an enormous survey that took place, and it said 540,000 new startups begin every month. Like, you have to imagine that your competition, you have to imagine how you're going to differentiate. You have to imagine so many different things. So yes, you're right. Take the clue. If the market is telling you X, if everyone's zagging, the best thing to do is to zig, you know, or if everyone's zigging, then you need to zag and try and differentiate yourself. So I knew that a lot of people did not have someone to help them with their personal brand and capture the content. And I also knew from a nostalgia perspective, people who get married now, there's always a videographer there. Like, it's not just about the pictures. Okay. People want to relive that feeling, you know, people want to relive it. So if, you know, let's say you and I hung out, after this podcast and we're like, let's just go to or Joshua Tree and hike, and we're now best friends and all this cool stuff. Like, that's cool. And then we could take a picture and we could post it. That picture is not worth 1,000 words. It's just not. Like, I just don't care. Like, it's too easy now. So what would have been cool is if you had a GoPro, I had a GoPro, and I synced it up and be like, cool, man. Like, we just like met this podcast host doing our thing, you know, whatever it is. That is different. That is different. It evokes emotions because you're able to relive it. You're able to sense it. You're able to sense people, body language, all these different things. So I knew for people to be truly understood that a picture wasn't going to do it, and that their corny, you know, picture with, you know, a quote of their own quote is just kind of the content that's just not going to win anymore. Mm-hmm. So, but you're right. I hope everyone really listens to that part. Like, the marketplace is going to tell you, and you need to be ready to swallow your pride and be like, okay, I'm going to pivot. And you also just need to realize this is just a never-ending experiment. That's all entrepreneurship is. That's all it is.
What does your day-to-day life look like right now?
My day-to-day life is very good right now. I now have grown from March. It was just me, you know, and now I have three videographers and editors. I have an assistant, military spouse, and this is great. She's my buddy who I used to fly with. It's his wife. She has four children. Three of them are now in school, and she's like, I put out something on Facebook and she's like, hey, I'm trying to kind of slowly get into the workforce. Like, I'll do it. She has no experience as an assistant, and she is killing it. So she is making my life so easy. Like, hey, can you book this flight? Can you do this? Can you do this? I mean, it's just amazing. So, and that sounds crazy, but the one big thing about entrepreneurship that I'm about to get into is I'm able to do so much now because I brought on the help. Okay. Mm. Like, all the things that you hate doing are the things that you need to offload as soon as possible. So how do you offload all these things as soon as possible? By becoming as profitable as possible, as soon as possible. So you don't need overhead. You don't need a physical space. You don't need so many things that you think you need. And you also don't need to be doing everything. The minute there is daylight and there is a chance for profitability, put that right back into your business by having someone who could do the things that you hate better than you and faster than you. Stop kidding yourself that you could do all these things. Okay. Like, you just can't. So, let's just imagine, I have no idea where this analogy is coming from. Imagine you're running a marathon and you trained your ass off for this marathon, and then all these people are cheering. You're not used to seeing all these people cheering. What if you stopped literally to individually give everyone a high five? You would never get done with the race, right? Mm-hmm. So you just do your thing, stay focused, and offload a lot of the things. You cannot get paralyzed by all the different things that you want to be doing. There's only one thing that you need to do as an entrepreneur, and that is to grow your business and to delegate everything to everyone. Mm-hmm. Okay. The difference between a freelancer and an entrepreneur is a freelancer says to Justin, I will do this and you will pay me for this. That is a freelancer. An entrepreneur, a true business owner says, we will do this. I will put you in touch with so-and-so. So-and-so will give you your monthly report. I will come out and make content for you. So-and-so is going to be editing. There's just like this stream and a process to all of it. And that is it. There has to be someone who's thinking big all the time, and that should be you.
What resources do you recommend? Like, where do you go to grow?
Wow. I just hired a business coach, and I was so against coaches very recently, and I hired a coach. I'm just going to shout him out, so hopefully I could play this for him. His name is Craig Ballantyne. He has probably doubled my business since I met him 4 weeks ago. I just want to say something I'm very proud of. I don't indulge very often, but since March, we've 7x'd our business. Like I said, I have a team. My wife's on the sales team. You know, she just closed a deal right before this, literally right before this. I was like, we're going to be late. But she closed a deal with a veteran, a Marine CEO, which I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, this is the perfect fit. So So we've been doing really well, but I think a resource is you should definitely find a coach. There is a level of self-accountability that we're used to that kind of dissipates when you're in the entrepreneurial space. Your eyes are too big. You have too many things you want to do. There's a million different plates spinning and you're going to start breaking plates here real soon. So I think it's absolutely critical to have a coach. And look, a coach is not a mentor. A mentor, I have advisors on my board and that's fine, but a coach is going to just give it to you raw and be like, stop doing this, do this. Someone who has the capacity to do that. So that's one. The second thing I would say as far as resources in order to grow, I mean, I'd be foolish if I didn't mention LinkedIn. LinkedIn is literally the number one source of all my leads, all my clients, all my promotional work for people. I live on that platform. I love that platform because it is designed to connect professionals. Everyone needs to realize, yes, you could sell on Instagram. Yes, you could sell on Facebook, but they really require you to kind of make some good investments. And no one who's an expert in digital media is going to tell you otherwise. But when LinkedIn has the organic reach that it does, if you're not there, you're literally missing out. You know, like you're literally missing out. It is the platform where you can attract the most people in the shortest amount of time. And I have one client right now, he's a former Green Beret and he's got a book coming out. In the first 30 days, his engagement rate is up to 150%, meaning essentially the amount of engagement he gets versus his followers is 150 times. Like it's crazy. It's crazy. And because we're making good content and now that's going to put him in a position to sell his book a lot better. And he's attracting an audience that is not Green Berets that are actually professionals in the marketplace. So contact me, anybody, if you really need to download on LinkedIn. I plan on making a course about it, but you have to use the resources available to you. And that is probably the primary resource for really kind of growing.
Plus one on both of those. I know we've got just a few minutes left. Yeah. Dude, I wish we had hours to talk. I love your message and I love your energy. I always like to leave the last question open-ended, which is either what have we not covered that you want listeners to know, or what's just some final words of wisdom that you'd like to leave them with?
Entrepreneurship cannot be option B, in my opinion. I love going all in because the risk is not scary enough to allow me to do otherwise. I understand family dynamics. I understand family. I understand finances. I understand stability. I understand discomfort. Look, if you listen to this whole episode and you got to this point, like, look how many times I jumped off the bridge without a parachute. And you know what? Everything's okay. So what I'm trying to say is I really, truly, truly believe that you could have your side hustle. You know, you could have your primary job and work on your side hustle or your entrepreneurial journey on the side, but it will never get the air and the water and the food and the nurturing that it needs to grow fast and for you to be able to figure out all the problems associated with it, unless it is option A. So the moment you have enough saved, or you have help, or you have an unbelievable business partner, that's a different conversation, but I don't have one, but the minute it's option A and you're all in, you will fall over so many times, failing every single day, and you will also have bigger, grander, more meaningful victories that allow you to surge fast, like, things are crazy right now, and it is just because I'm dedicated. If anything I did in the last year, if I had done 10% less, I wouldn't be there. You know, I just wouldn't. Like, it is an ongoing thing, and you have to love it. I'd never, ever, 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 ever get up, and I'm just like, I don't want to play today. Like, no way. Like, I'm so all about it. I'm like, who can I help today? Not who can I close today? Who can I help today? Like, there's someone out there right now that needs something from me. I am uniquely qualified to do that. I am differentiating myself with this. I am all in, and they are going to feel it when they talk to me and they're going to say yes or no. They're going to say yes or no. There's nothing in between. So as long as I'm prepared for both of those outcomes, I'm able to give 100% every time.
Rich, this is fantastic. And for listeners, in the show notes at beyonduniform.org, we have all sorts of links to richcardona.net, richcardonamedia.com, his LinkedIn profile, his military influencer profile, his Thrive profile, and his podcast, which we didn't get into, but he also hosts a podcast that we'll link to. 17 episodes, I think, are there right now. Yeah. And I'm sure if you're hearing Rich's story, his voice, or seeing him in the video, you get the sense of the truth of what he's saying, the energy behind it, and the conviction. And I just want to say again, I just admire how you found a way to build this new life for your family in alignment. And I loved the advice you had to share today. I know our listeners will as well.
I really appreciate it. And I'm so long-winded sometimes, so I will leave it at that. But I'm grateful for the opportunity. Thank you for giving me the platform to help others. It means the world. And I hope your show continues to just grow. And I know, you know, the guy before me last episode was an animal, but you are doing amazing work. I appreciate what you're doing. And anything I could do to collaborate with you in the future to help veterans, please let me know. Consider it done.
Thank you.
Surface. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free-flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.